wanted to stay in church and sit with mom, and they all said no. So I don't know what that means, but boys and girls, you can go to children's church this morning, and we're appreciative of our children's church workers teaching our children this morning. A 2011 survey of U.S. moms with children under six asked the following questions. What is the worst place to have to change a diaper? 47% said a public restroom with no changing table. 27% said when no restroom or car is available. 18% said airplane bathrooms, which is really silly. What are you doing on an airplane with a kid anyway? I mean, that's just, we've done that, and that's a bad combo. What's the most embarrassed you have been in public? 14% said diaper leaks. This is children now, by the way. 52% unrelenting crying or tantrums, and 12% said when their child asked an embarrassing question of a stranger. How many of you ever had that happen? Your child asked, oh, that's universal, isn't it? Goes all the way, doesn't it? Here's an interesting one. Was the first day of school harder for you or the child? 41% admitted it was harder for the mom than the child, and 26% said equally hard on both. And when asked what would you do with an extra hour in your day, 23% said catch up on my reading, 22% said sleep, and sorry dads, only 7% said they would opt out for a little more romance. So that's what moms do. So what can we do for our moms today? Well, it has been said, I think it's true, that the greatest gift a dad can give his children is to love their mother. Would you agree with that? I think that's very true. That's the most stabilizing, tender, beneficial thing that a dad can do for his children. I want to add something to that. I think the greatest gift a man can give his wife is to lead his family. The greatest gift a man can give his wife is to lead his family. And so today, we are going to give a challenge to fathers on Mother's Day. That might seem a little bit unreasonable or a little bit different. But the reason is that the best way to help moms is for dads to be the dads that they need to be in their homes. So let's turn to Proverbs chapter 4 as our text this morning. Rather than an outline on the screen, this chapter in Proverbs 4, this chapter is going to really outline itself for us today as it gives us Solomon's words to his sons. Solomon is conveying to his sons important principles about fatherhood, and he's going to communicate to his sons throughout this chapter, as he does throughout the book of Proverbs, but this chapter has a very special focus on families. Ordinarily, we look to chapters such as, or verses such as Proverbs chapter 22, verse 6, train up a child in the way he should go. When he is old, he will not depart from it. Very true, and many great principles from Proverbs, but this entire chapter really gives us an outline of an exhortation to a father. And this is important, an exhortation to a father, because a righteous father will bring blessing to his home. Listen to Proverbs chapter 20, verse 7. It says, "The righteous man leads a blameless life. Blessed are his children after him." So when dads live a righteous life, when dads are leading their home as they should, there's a blessing for his children. And what blesses our wives? What's the greatest gift for a mom? It's to see their children prospering and flourishing and being blessed. And so, husbands, if you want to bless your wives, be that righteous father, be that righteous husband in the home. That's the greatest thing you can give to your wives. Proverbs 29, verse 17 says this, "Discipline your son and he will give you peace. He will bring delight to your soul." And we want that kind of relationship in our families. We want peace in our families. We want happiness and delight in our souls and in our homes. And what's the way to do that? Well, it's for a man to take the mantle of leadership, to lead his home in truth and in righteousness as a man of God. And so, dads, today we're going to talk to you. Now, obviously, there are some here who are single moms. There are some here who are either a husband or a wife in a home with a non-believing spouse. And so you're trying to, at times, instill biblical principles, and there, at times, there's agreement on those principles, and at other times, there may not be agreement. And I just want to encourage us today, in whatever circumstance, obviously this is primarily addressed to our dads, but for all of us, as we have the task of raising children, some of us influencing our grandchildren as well, that we'll listen to these principles from Proverbs chapter 4. And the first is found in chapter 4, verse 1. And principle number 1 is this, that fathers, your authority comes from God. Your authority comes from God. Proverbs 4, verse 1. Listen, my sons, to a father's instruction. Pay attention and gain understanding. I give you sound learning, so do not forsake my teaching. We gain immediately an insight from Solomon that he accepts this role of teaching his children. He accepts the role of providing them leadership. He accepts the role of the authority that comes from God. This is important for us today because we're in a society today that diminishes responsibility and diminishes authority. Kim was noticing a mug that was at Starbucks, not a Starbucks mug, but one from one of the co-workers that were there. And it said this, question everything, respect no one. Now, isn't that just totally wrong? But that's the attitude of our society today, isn't it? Question everything, respect no one. In our society, in our culture today, we have this attitude, this idea that respect must be earned. There's an element of truth to that. We see that, we accept that. Certainly a person in authority can destroy that respect that is due to him or her. Authority and authority position in itself does not relate to the fact of one's character, but yet that authority position is to be respected and to be honored, especially the authority of parents. And so dads, understand this, that authority to you comes from God. In other words, God has given that to you, and it is not arrogant or mean-spirited for you to exert that authority in your home and for you to have expectations of the way that home is to function. That's countercultural. But the Bible calls us to be countercultural in this area. This is something that's changed over the years. That structure, that authority, that respect that's there has diminished in our society. But we need to gain that back, and we need to gain that back in your homes. You say, well, Pastor Paul, you know, that really can't happen. Our kids are more influenced by society. We really can't demand them to say yes, sir, and yes, ma'am, and to be polite and to do these things. Oh, really? I think we can. How many of you have been to the new Chick-fil-A here in Vineland? Okay, that's a good bit of you. You guys eat out too much. So, do you like it? What do they say when you go to the counter? My pleasure. Who's working behind the counter? Well, some of our teenagers here, right? Some of our young adults here. Mostly teens and young adults, right? How do they get those teens and young adults? Aren't they extraordinarily polite at Chick-fil-A? It seems to me that is a part of the atmosphere and the culture of Chick-fil-A. Well, how do they get teenagers to be so polite and to say yes, sir, and yes, ma'am, and my pleasure? And how do they do that? Because the leadership there and the owners of Chick-fil-A have said this is a priority to us. And if you want this paycheck, this is what you do. In other words, they've done two things. Number one, they've created a powerful incentive for young people to be polite. And you know what happens? Some of you, you don't need to testify now, but I wonder how many Chick-fil-A employees have found themselves outside of Chick-fil-A, and they've said to someone, "My pleasure." Where did that come from? You know, but they've done two things. First of all, they've created a powerful incentive for a particular kind of polite behavior. If you want your paycheck, this is what you do. But the second thing they've done is equally as important. They've created a culture of politeness. What do I mean by that? I mean that the managers are that way in the store, and they don't just tell the employees, they act that way themselves. There is a atmosphere of politeness in the way they deal with one another, in the way they deal with vendors that come into the store. It is emphasized, it's talked about, it's repeated, it's just part of the culture. And because it's part of the culture, and because there's an incentive that's there, even young people, even in today's disrespectful society, they've learned and they function in that way. So yes, it can be done. And yes, it can be something that we can bring back in our homes and in our society. You see, when we have this kind of, our society today is very informal, very familiar, young people treat adults as peers and rather than giving them respect that's there. But you see, there's some things that are lost when we do that. Now, one area in which that hasn't been done, you notice the military still follows by pretty strict rules and standards of respecting authority. They realize how important it is. And some things in our society that we've lost in this dismissing of respect and dismissing of honor that is due to those in authority, whether they be parents or elders or teachers, our culture has been degraded. We've lost a certain amount of dignity. We increase in the area of disrespect and lawlessness and I think unhappiness and even disorder in our culture and our society when we don't have those boundaries and we don't have those areas of respect. And I think that's something that needs to be brought back into our homes. Dads, I call upon you to be the ones to do that. Solomon made no apology. Made no excuse for the fact that the authority that he had was authority from God. And listen, dads, it is not about you being on a power kick and getting everything you want and having your way. No, it's a structure of authority that comes from God for the sake of your children and for the bringing up of a good society. And that's something we have to accept. And fathers, I call you today to be like Solomon and to understand that that authority comes from God. Second, look with me at verses 3 through 5. The second lesson from Solomon is this. Fathers, honor the godly traditions that have been passed down to you. Follow with me in verse 3. When I was a young boy in my father's house, still tender and an only child of my mother, he taught me and said, of course, the he that he's speaking about is his father David. He taught me and said, lay hold of my words with all your heart. Keep my commandments and you will live. Get wisdom, get understanding. Do not forget my words or swerve from them. Who's Solomon talking about? He's talking about his father, King David. And he's telling his sons of the good influence that David had in Solomon's life. Let me ask you something. Was David a perfect father? Not on your life. Far from perfect as a father. And Solomon knew those imperfections. In fact, Solomon is the result of David's sin, isn't he? Sin with Bathsheba and a child that died, and then Solomon being born of his mother Bathsheba. So Solomon knew all about David's imperfections and sins, and yet he says, listen to me just like I listened to my father. He's not saying that David was sinless. He's saying that there are parts of our heritage and parts of our family and godly traditions that need to be passed down and need to be emphasized. He taught me and said, there are things that we should pass down to our children, respect for others, our family heritage, the testimony of family members. I hope you share those testimonies. If you've got moms and dads, if you've got saved parents and they have Christian testimonies, you need to share those testimonies. When your parents have taken steps of faith in the past that you remember, you need to share those testimonies with your children. And we need to pass on that heritage of testimony. See, we live in a time where independence and individualism and isolation are the way that people function. We've lost that idea of the family connectiveness to the past. But there are some very good things about that. When we look back to our families and we look back to the good things, there's some bad things too, but those are things that we can learn from, the good things and the good traditions that are to be passed down. Look, turn to Proverbs chapter 22, verse 1. Reminds us of the goodness and the good things that could be passed down to us. That name, that heritage that takes so long to gain, and yet it shouldn't be just tossed away. A good name is more desirable than great riches, or to be esteemed is better than silver or gold. Teach your children to be proud of their family heritage. Teach your children to be proud of, if you're from a Christian home, the beauty and the importance of that. And fathers, pass down that heritage of your family just like Solomon passed it down of David, his father. The third is found in verses 6 through 9, the third exhortation. And this is the exhortation: fathers, take responsibility for your children's spiritual, academic, and personal growth. Let me say that again. Fathers, take responsibility for your children's spiritual, academic, and personal growth. Notice with me, it begins in verse 5, where Solomon tells his sons to get wisdom, but continues on through verse 9. Notice with me verse 7. Wisdom is supreme, therefore get wisdom. Verse 6, do not forsake wisdom. She will protect you. And it goes on, verse 9, she will be a garland of grace on your head and present you with a crown of splendor. Solomon is telling his sons, seek wisdom. Live a good life. Live a disciplined life. Don't follow the common ways. Don't follow the easy path, but seek wisdom. I'm going to apply this morning that I think one of the things is that we are responsible as fathers for the spiritual and academic and personal growth of our children. We're the ones that are accountable. We're the ones that must bring them up. Proverbs talks much about discipline of our children, because that's going to be necessary if we're going to have our children walk in the way of wisdom. We're going to have to chart that path for them. We're going to have to map that out. We're going to have to instruct them, because a child does not naturally move toward the path of wisdom. A child naturally moves toward the path of his own desires. And as parents, we have to redirect those desires of our children so that they move in the path of wisdom. And that's exactly what Proverbs 22:6 says. Train a child in the way he should go, and when he is old, he will not depart from it. Some feel that there's an element of that verse that speaks about the uniqueness of each child and training them in that way, and of nurturing them and mentoring them and finding what their interests and likes and limits and challenges are. And with that set of individual circumstances and individual beauty that God's created in that child, then molding that child to walk in the way of wisdom. But it involves discipline as well. Proverbs 29, verse 17. Discipline your son, and he will give you peace. He will bring delight to your soul. Proverbs 19, verse 18. Discipline your son, for in that there is hope. Do not be a willing party to his death. And Proverbs 19, verse 27. Stop listening to instruction, my son, and you will stray from the words of knowledge. Let's focus on that for a minute. We're looking at Proverbs 4, about teaching a child in the path of wisdom. Notice what it says in Proverbs 19, verse 27. To his son, son, if you stop listening to my instruction, you will stray from the words of knowledge. So as fathers, we've got to discipline our children. We've got to point them in the right way. We've got to lead them in the right way. And we've got to do so in a day and during a time and in an era where discipline is being ridiculed and minimized, where enforcing of standards is being mocked as someone who's on a power-hungry kick, where spanking children is the most tormenting type of thing you can do and is in some cases viewed upon as a form of child abuse. So let me give you seven common failures in discipline. These are related to our culture and things that I've observed and things that you've observed as well. Seven common failures, Father, that we have to be on guard against, that we have to avoid. Number one, unclear rules. Unclear rules or unclear standards. I mean that in a couple of ways. One way is when our child's doing something and we've never really told them or addressed this area, and we expect them to understand or to know or to obey or to listen when we've never really given them any clear set of instructions. Or when we change the instructions or change things that we're supposed to be doing. It's like the one mother who famously says, don't do what I tell you, do what I want you to do. How am I supposed to know what you want me to do? You know, we need to give clear instructions. But I think another way in which we give unclear instructions, parents, every time we warn our child, every time we say no, and then don't follow through on what we've told them we're going to do, you know what we're doing? We're giving unclear instructions. Every time we repeat and repeat and repeat and repeat and threaten and threaten and nothing happens, what are we doing? we're giving unclear instructions. We're saying, this is what you're supposed to do, and all that we, and the child continues in their misbehavior or continues in their breaking the rules or violating the rules or whatever, and we get madder and we get more frustrated and our face gets red and our voice gets raised and our words sometimes become angry, but we don't follow through. And you know, we are instilling in that child that what mommy says or what daddy says really doesn't matter because the child continues to do what they want to do. Here's some guidelines that have been repeated many times. I've had them shared with me, and you've heard them before as well. You tell a child once, you warn a child once, and then you take action with discipline if that is not done. And yet, what do we see so many times? Christian homes, non-Christian homes, parents tell and talk and warn, and Junior, stop jumping on the bed. Boingy, 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 boingy. Stop jumping on the bed. Boingy, boingy, boingy. If you don't stop jumping on the bed, boingy, boingy, boingy. I'm telling you for the last time, you better stop jumping. Boingy, boingy, boingy. What are you doing to that child? You're saying, mommy doesn't really matter. What mommy says doesn't really matter. What daddy says doesn't really matter. So you tell them once, you warn them once, and then you enact the discipline that's necessary. Now, by the way, if jumping on the bed, I don't know what rules you have about jumping on the bed. I always thought that was kind of fun. You know, something about jumping on a bed. If you don't have a trampoline, you know, mom's bed will do just fine. But if there's a no jumping on the bed rule, and you come in and Junior knows the rule and he's jumping on the bed, well, you don't need to warn him. You just take action because he knows what that rule is, right? Just makes sense, but I'm amazed at how much we fail in this area of establishing standards and rules. And so that's the first, is unclear rules. Whether it's by repeating yourself over and over again, you're unclear. You tell them once, you warn them once, and then you discipline. I'm going to talk about the form of discipline in just a minute. Another one of the seven failures, another one, is canceling out what the other parent has done. Moms and dads, aren't children masters at working one against the other? Aren't they great at that? Well, mom said I can't. Oh, okay, well, you can. And when they do that, they only tell a part of the story, right? So that was always something very strict in our home, that if our children were caught manipulating one against the other, the punishment was even more severe. Now, this means, parents, you've got to communicate about the discipline and about the rules that are there, but don't let your children work one against the other. You know what they're doing? You're allowing them to cause division within your home. You're allowing them to cause tension within your home. Don't allow them to use one parent to cancel out the rules or the punishment that the other has given. A third common discipline failure is making excuses for your child. Have you ever seen something like this? A four-year-old in a time, maybe you're having some company over or something like that, and your four-year-old doesn't get what he wants and throws himself on the floor and has a temper tantrum and screaming and fighting and stomping and screaming and all this thing. And mommy says, oh, she's tired. No, don't make excuses for your child. Say, well, there may be times, sometimes tired children do get irritable and we've got to keep them on schedule and we've got to feed them. Please, parents, if you're dragging your kid from store to store all afternoon and they've not gotten their nap and not gotten their lunch and they're irritable, well, that's your fault, not his, right? But when they do act up and when they do sin and they do break the rules and they do throw temper tantrums, don't excuse their behavior. Don't make excuses for them. This teaches the child that they're not responsible, and it just encourages further acting out. Children have to learn there's a right way and a wrong way to express their displeasure. There's a right way and a wrong way to respond when they're tired. There's a right way and a wrong way to talk to an adult. There's a right way and a wrong way to ask for something and so on and so forth, and we've got to teach them in that right way. Fathers, you've got to do this in your homes. A fourth discipline problem or discipline mistake is excessive or harsh discipline. Ephesians 6, verse 4, fathers, do not exasperate your children. Some translations say, don't frustrate your children. Instead, bring them up in the training and instruction of the Lord. Don't wear them out. Don't overburden them with harsh or unrealistic punishments or judgments or rules. Let me say this. Any form of discipline when you are angry should not be done. When you're angry, don't spank your child when you're angry. You're not in control. You're going to hurt that child. Certainly, you never want to hurt a child physically, but you're going to respond, and your child's going to see that anger in you rather than disciplining them out of love. You want to know that you can, when you spank your child, that needs to be with love, and most of the time I want to say that needs to be with a tear in your eye when you spank that child. They need to know that this is the last thing mommy or daddy wants to do, and that you do that out of love for them. You need to teach them that that time of even corporal punishment is a time of teaching. Our children should, I'll just give you our experience. Sometimes you hear me, I've said many times, it wasn't a good day till somebody got a whooping. Let me put that in its fuller context. We didn't beat our children every day. They didn't need it every day. Sometimes they did. And when they did, we did that. You know when that happened most? Happened between the ages of 2 to 6, maybe starting 18 months old, a little and older than that. And as they got older and their communication skills improved, the spankings diminished because we were able to talk with them and reason with them. And when we discovered that there were things that they that were very important to them, we would use those as areas of discipline. And so that spanking diminishes, and wasn't the same with each child. Some of our three children, some were very responsive to talking, and some were just stubborn and belligerent at times. And it was those times that you would have to spank that child to break down their will, to show them that the rules were to be enforced, that there was no negotiation, and that was something very, very important that they had to do. And they learned from that. And they also learned because there was a paddle that was set on top of the refrigerator. And when I pointed to the paddle, things got done because they knew Daddy wasn't just blowing off steam. They knew that Daddy would spank them, and they knew that Daddy would enforce discipline. And heaven forbid if I ever came home from church in the afternoon and mommy said, you got to deal with David, you got to deal with Michael, you got to deal with... Oh, that was not happy. And they did not want that to happen. So that would mean that when mommy would threaten, if you don't do this, I'm going to talk to... Oh, okay, I better straighten up. And they did. Fathers, I want to say something to you. Please take this in the right context. You should never beat your child. You should never harm your child. You should never make idle threats to your child. But I think there's something good when your 12-year-old son is thinking about doing something and contemplates the thought, you know, if I do this, he really might kill me. I don't think that's a bad thing. No, please don't kill your children. Don't beat your children. Don't hit them with the 2x4. You know, don't do any of that stuff. But there ought to be, fathers, especially with your sons, there ought to be a respect for your authority. There ought to be that reverence that dad means business. There ought to be that knowledge that even if the time for spankings is over, there ought to be the knowledge, there ought to be the understanding that what mom and dad say, they really mean. Some of you are facing problems with children and church attendance. We never had that problem. It wasn't just because we were in ministry. But our children knew from the time growing up that we go to church. And I have to say, in all of our parenting years, we never faced that issue. Oh, we faced other issues. But we didn't face the going to church issue. Why? Because there was no negotiation about that. We went on vacation, we went to church. When there were several families together, in-laws and parents, and then we had church together. But that was a priority that was always known in our children, and so that issue that never became an issue because they, well, what's the use? We're going to church, you know. As some share in their testimony, I had a drug disease. I had a drug problem when I was 2. My parents drug me to church Sunday morning. They drug me to church Sunday night. They drug me to church Wednesday night, and that's just the way that we grew up, and it was a non-negotiable issue. And so when it's non-negotiable, there tends to be less battling and less conflict in that. So fathers, be very aware of that, and that's your responsibility and your role in those areas. Number 5, parents, when you give in on discipline out of sympathy for your child. Now, be careful that you don't discipline that you're grounded for the next year. That ain't going to work. You're going to have to give in on that one, right? But when you enact a form of discipline and you take something away or you ground them or put them in the room or whatever the punishment is, don't go back on that. And sometimes we do that out of sympathy. You know, our kids there and they're crying and they're so pathetic and they're so cute and, you know, we're not upset at them anymore and say, oh, okay, well, no. They've got to learn to face the consequences for their actions. And so don't go and change. Be careful with the discipline you give them. Make sure it's appropriate. Make sure it's realistic. Make sure it's related to the thing that they've done. But when you do it, then don't go back and change it. And I see many parents doing that. Number six, one form of discipline that I'm speaking of out of years of ministry as a youth pastor. Parents who would punish their children by saying, well, you can't go to church. I'm talking about especially like youth group and things like that. If there's a fun activity, if the youth group's going camping or to the amusement park or something like that, yeah, that's a fun thing. That's not part of their spiritual growth and development. But don't take them out of a Christian atmosphere out of punishment to them. You need them in that Christian atmosphere. You need them with their Christian peers, their Christian youth group leaders. And so don't punish them in the way of taking them away from church, except, of course, the fun activity. I'm talking about youth group and Sunday school and those things where they perhaps enjoy going. Don't use that. And see, that's the problem sometimes as Christians parents. We're at a loss for what to take away or discipline or how to give them consequences because, you know, a lot of times our children do live in a fairly, you know, narrow frame to begin with. And sometimes it seems that that's the only thing, well, what am I going to punish them with or take away? And so youth group or Sunday school or something like that becomes an option. But I don't think that's a good choice. We need to find some other creative way to do that. Send them to my house. I'll have them work for me. You can do that anytime. Number seven, fighting your children's battles. Fighting your children's battles. Parents, when a person in authority comes and tells you something about your child, assume that that person is right without taking judgment. Assume that that person is right. Let me tell you what our society today instills in us. Because of the rejection of authority, we assume that that person is wrong and that our six-year-old is right about what happened at school today. Do you realize how silly that is? And yet how many of us as parents react that way or respond that way? That our six-year-old knows more than our college-educated teacher about what happened in school yesterday afternoon. When someone in authority tells us something, now, there's no 100% guarantee that they are right. Sometimes people in authority do make mistakes and do judge things inappropriately and are prejudiced against one child or another child. I understand that that can happen, but your children need to know that those in authority, just as your authority position is from God, so is that teacher. So is that law enforcement official. So is that a children's worker at church. Those authority positions are from God. God places us under authority. And we need to accept that, and we need to instill that. Now, we talk to our children. We ask them what happened. We get the story. If we're suspicious, we make some further investigation. But we do that apart from the child. And we make sure that that son or daughter knows that authority is to be respected. Let them face the consequences. If something is broken or something needs to be replaced or there's some punishment, let them face the consequences. Don't we learn that way? I don't know about you, but I learn far more from my mistakes than I do from my successes. When we make a mistake, wow, I have a phrase. Kim wouldn't let me put it on the church sign. In fact, I had it out one day and she said, take that down, that doesn't look right. It says, stupid should be painful. I thought that was perfectly reasonable. And, you know, you make a mistake, you learn from the mistake. But so I did what every good husband does. I took it down. And aren't you thankful for Kim? You know how awful I'd be without her? Boy, oh boy. So those are some discipline errors that we make. And we see that in Proverbs chapter 4, 6 through 9, as Solomon teaches his son, son, walk in the way of wisdom. Dads, if our children are going to walk in the way of wisdom, we're going to have to lead them to the path. They're not going to discover that path by themselves. The next exhortation from Solomon to fathers. Fathers, Guide your children to avoid danger. Look with me at verses 10 through 17. This is all about bad company. As Jesus said, bad company corrupts good morals. Verses 10 through 17. Listen, my son, accept what I say. The years of your life will be many. I guide you in the way of wisdom. When you walk, your steps will not be hampered. When you run, you will not stumble. Hold on to instruction. Verse 14, do not set foot on the path of the wicked. Verse 15, avoid it. Do not travel that path. Verses 16 and 17, Solomon warns him about those who are people of ill character. For they cannot sleep till they do evil. They are robbed of slumber till they make someone fall. They eat the bread of wickedness and drink the wine of violence. So fathers, lead your children to avoid danger. Lead them. Warn them of Satan's traps. I think we can say that about our day and age today. Warn them of their tendencies. You know your children. You know their bend. You know their attitudes. You know their weaknesses. You know the way that they respond when they're angry or upset or frustrated. Warn them. Teach them about those character traits about themselves. Better that they learn it from you in their children and teen years than they learn it from their own failure in their adult years. So let them learn those lessons. Warn them about bad influences. Paul writes in 1 Corinthians 15:33, bad company corrupts good morals, good character. Fathers, warn them about the internet. I want to tell you something. One of the greatest dangers facing your children today comes from the internet. Listen to these statistics. This is from Covenant Eyes, a Christian website, monitoring website that I think I would highly recommend to you. 67% of children admit to clearing their internet history to hide their online activity. 67%. That's quite a bit more than a majority, isn't it? 79% of accidental exposures to internet pornography among kids take place in the home. Okay, if your children are seeing something vile, it is most likely happening in your home. 56% of divorce cases involve one party having an obsessive internet or interest in online porn. And recent statistics are saying that nearly two-thirds of divorces taking place, Facebook is somehow involved in that. Perhaps not in the origination of that, but in the communication going on. 29% of working adults accessed explicit websites on work computers. These are just, and I could go on and on and on with other statistics, but I think you see the danger. And yet as parents, I think that many of us are not alarmed to the dangers, and fathers in particular, we are not monitoring this and managing this in our homes. And let me just say something very emphatically, that privacy is a root of sin. And the idea that we have this idea of individualism and privacy and, you know, things that, you know, just, you know, well, this is my world. No, privacy is a root of sin. And when we have areas of our lives that are closed and secluded, and that's the danger of the internet. That's the danger of internet-related pornography, is that it gives the false assumption that there's some kind of private thing going on where it's not private. Our minds are being corrupted and polluted. And your children's minds are being corrupted and polluted. So privacy is a root of sin. So the idea of the use of technology, fathers, whatever your children are doing in terms of technology is completely open for your view and needs to be frequently inspected. Fathers, I think you're foolish if you give your child unmonitored internet access in any form. Okay? Fathers, I think you're foolish if you give your child unmonitored, and let me say teen as well, unmonitored internet access in any form. That means PDAs, that means Androids, that means iPhones, that means iPads, that means tablets, that means computers, that means anything that's there. And so if you cannot figure a way to monitor that, or if you think your child might be doing things, by the way, that includes social media, okay, Facebook and what they're saying and emails and what they're saying and what they're doing, no privacy. Why? Because privacy leads to sin. No privacy. Now, I'm not talking about going in and finding out what your daughter's saying to her girlfriends and so on, but knowing that's there and occasionally looking and seeing the kinds of conversation that are there, absolutely. Absolutely necessary. So, well, that'll make her upset. That'll make him upset. Father, man up. Man up. Who's paying for the cell phone? Who's paying for the fee? Who's paying for the computer hookup? Who's paying for the internet access? You are. Man up and do what's necessary to protect your home. If our children need technology to excel in school and things, I understand that. I understand the need for that. But make sure that it's monitored and make sure that you're the one who knows what's happening. Because children are being led down a path of promiscuity and just dirtiness and perversion and filth. And it is our job, men. It is our job to protect our homes. If someone were prowling around your yard at night, if you happen to wake up and you thought you heard something outside and you saw a flashlight in the bushes, what would you do? You wouldn't wake up your wife and say, honey, there's somebody. Well, some of you would, but that's another story. What would you do? What does a man do? Gets up. Maybe he calls the police. That'd not be a bad idea. You get up. Fathers, have you been to the amusement park with your little kids just when they're starting to walk and they're not in the stroller anymore, but they're kind of out on their own and they're wanting to go and do things? How do you watch them? Like a hawk. In your mind, you're running, somebody touches my kid, I will get there. I will just put them in a... You're protective. Aren't you protective of your child? A good man is. God wired you that way. This is what you need to be protective of in your home. Because it's going to destroy your children and destroy your family. Fathers, there ought not to be any unmonitored, unaccessed internet connection, internet technology that your children have. And I want to give you my opinion. That means kids don't get PDAs and cell phones with internet access. They don't need it. Kim and I don't have, I know we are living in the dark ages. I think we are the last two adults that don't have an iPhone or an Android. Primarily because I didn't want to pay $30 a month extra for the data plan. Don't need it. Can you wait 10 minutes to get home and get online and find directions to do that? So for us, we don't need it. If you think you need it, all right, that's fine. But we just determined that we don't need that on our phones. And I want to tell you, your children don't need that on their phones. It is an invitation for Satan to enter in and to bring corruption and pollution and defilement in their lives. And so Solomon says, he's warning them, verses 10 through 17, he's warning them of the dangers. He's warning his sons. And he's saying, sons, listen. And finally, fathers, verses 18 and 19, fathers, don't give up. Listen to what Solomon says. The path of the righteous is like the first gleam of dawn, shining ever brighter to the full light of day. But the way of the wicked is like deep darkness. They do not know what makes them stumble. You know what Solomon is saying? Solomon's saying, sons, this path of righteousness, it may seem difficult, but you know what it's like? It's like the first gleam of dawn. If you stay the night, if you endure, if you remain watchful and faithful like a watchman waiting for the morning, if you stay diligent, you know what? Morning will come. Righteousness will come. The blessings that righteousness bring to your life and bring to your home will be seen. And so stay faithful. Don't give up. Don't give in to the tendencies of the world. Don't give in to the sinful desires of your children, because their sinful nature will draw them away. They will not be drawn to righteousness by their self-nature, by their self-will. They'll be drawn to sin. They'll be drawn to self-desire. That's what self does. And so we need to be guided and nurtured. That's why God gives us parents. That's why God gives us fathers. That's why God gives us churches. That's why God gives us families, so that our desires can, so that we can encourage one another to walk in that way of righteousness. And fathers, you have that responsibility. You want to make mom smile? You want to bring delight to her heart? You want to give her a gift that can never be taken away? then lead as God has given you the instruction and lead your family in righteousness. And Father, make our church a church where men are leading their homes in righteousness. And that righteousness is seen in the blessings that take place in the lives of our children and our families, our wives, our homes. May they be places of peace and safety. May they be homes filled with joy and blessing because Christ rules and reigns there. It's Mother's Day today, but fathers, I want to ask you, would you take the mantle of leadership in your home? Would you address the areas that have been negligent? Would you confess letting things go that should not be let go? Oh, moms and dads, this is an exhausting task. And it gets difficult at times, but it is one that is worth the reward and worth the effort because of the reward that we'll gain. The literal preservation of our children. Oh, fathers, walk in righteousness. If there are areas in your life that must be confessed because you're walking in wickedness, then please, for the sake of your children, my friend, would you confess those areas to the Lord? And if there are areas that you have found yourself unsuccessful in gaining victory, would you find a Christian brother or a pastor or someone that you respect in your life to help you and to hold you accountable because your children's lives are at stake? Oh, men, let's rise to the occasion and be men that our wives would look to and say, I'm thankful for him. He's leading our home in righteousness. That will bring a blessing to your wife and a blessing to your home. And Father, do that for our homes today in Jesus' name. Amen.